Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and can we just hit rewind already? Can we hit the reset button? It's only been like 3-4 weeks already, and everything sucks. And with me, I have... and...
I got nothing.
It just seems like everything awful wants to happen in the same freaking week span of time.
Seems to be the theme of... It seems to be a theme of what's been going on this since the last episode. At least after the last episode.
Yeah, because it apparently wasn't enough with, like, the Grammys controversies just building and building and getting worse and worse. There's fucking documents and timelines and out the ass. But then to cap it off with yet more deaths in the form of, you know, iconic metal drummer Sean Reinhardt and the whole thing with Kobe Bryant and his daughter.
Yeah, and the other, and seven other people, which, yes, they're actually... 9 people, well, including Kobe and his daughter, which, yeah, makes it worse.
Yeah, it's not been a great week in the grand scheme of things. Probably not even best to bother with formalities, because there's just too much to get through, and we don't even have song discussions. It's going to be all Grammys controversy, and then the Grammys itself. So, Jesus, where the hell did we even leave off last time?
Well, last time we left off with the start of the ever-building drama, to say the least, regarding the Recording Academy and its now-ousted CEO, Deborah Dugan. One day after we recorded that show, pretty much everything we needed to know came out. Now... I will preface all this by saying this is not going to be our usual, quote-unquote, jovial comedic snark fest that we do every year for the Grammys, because this year, there's too much awfulness to really joke about. There'll be some bright spots later, but for now, consider this our civil duty and due diligence to go through the bulk of what's been happening behind the scenes at the Recording Academy, because just when you think it was bad enough, it can always get worse.
So much worse.
So.
Very much worse.
As I mentioned, one day after we recorded our last show, a charge of discrimination was filed at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in Los Angeles, California, from claimant Deborah Dugan against the respondent, the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. Reading through this document, yeah, there's a lot more that we didn't know about that I have spent some time going over, and I have pretty much wrote down all the notes that needed to be noted down so we can accurately go through this. And we have to do this chronologically, which means we have to go all the way back to spring of 2019. So here's the setup. Deborah Dugan is contacted by the Recording Academy in search of a new CEO after the whole Neil Portnow shit happened. And after meeting... And after meeting the 40-member board and citing a need to increase the element of diversity at the Academy, she received a call stating that she was the top choice for the position. A contract was signed on May 8th, effective on August 1st for a 3-year term, and that, quoting the document directly, as I will throughout this whole thing, in the event that Ms. Dugan was terminated without cause or left for good reason prior to the expiration of the term, she would receive a significant payout from the Academy. Subsequently, she was also paid, quote, significantly less compensation than her male predecessor, Neil Portnow. And when asked to be paid commensurate with the compensation received by Portnow, it was denied, and she was told that, quote, she should be happy to be earning more than she had in her previous role, which was the CEO of Bono's Red Organization, a nonprofit organization.
Huh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Here's where things start to get, it gets worse pretty early on. So, May 18th, 2019, Dugan is invited to an Academy board meeting, and prior to was contacted by Joel Katz, Recording Academy counsel and attorney, with a private dinner invitation. Agreeing, quote, as so not to upset the apple cart before she even began her work at the Academy, they met, and Katz acted extremely inappropriately, calling Dugan baby and saying that she was very pretty multiple times, talking about, quote, his failed marriage and complaining that he was lonely and had no one to spend time with, before mentioning that he was very, very rich and that they should spend time together. Dugan made it clear that she was not interested in these advances, but Katz would try to kiss her, with Dugan turning away, quoted as being repulsed, with Katz still acting as such toward her.
Oh, one of these bastards, eh?
Oh,
yeah, another one of these bastards.
I mean, I guess we know why his marriage is failing. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after that, Dugan learns at the board meeting that, quote, a foreign recording artist and member of the Academy had accused Mr. Portnow of raping her following a performance that she gave at Carnegie Hall. It was presented as if the board had just learned of it. However, the board is alleged to have been well aware of the allegation at the time Ms. Dugan agreed to take on the CEO position, but never told her. And in discussing whether to give Portnow a bonus for his past work for the Academy, Dugan advised that the vote could not go forward until the full board was told of the rape allegation. But prior to the disclosure, quote, the board had asked Ms. Dugan to hire Portnow as a consultant for the hefty sum of $750,000.
Mm.
Yeah. Now we go from August to November of 2019. After Dugan's initial hiring, she had the option of terminating Claudine Little, the executive assistant to Portnow, and could hire her own, but decided not to, quoted as, out of nothing more than the goodness of her heart. She was retained as the executive assistant role, but she, quote, did not consistently forward messages to Ms. Dugan, and simply did not know how to manage an Outlook calendar, which she apparently was not required to do for Portnow, and received complaints for her conduct from the manager of Barbara Streisand and the head of Universal Music Group, among others. Dugan offered Little a position for board relations and accepted it at first, but then changed her mind and refused, leaving Dugan to work with her and an outside consultant and HR to find Little a new role. In October, Little took a leave of absence and would not return on her planned November 25th return date, with the executive committee, quote, abruptly confronting Dugan and began interrogating her about the Little situation. She explained, but then the committee started critiquing Dugan for random things and did not support Dugan in any way with respect to Little. December 9th, Dugan receives an email from Harvey Mason, the chair of the board, stating that she, again, the CEO of the Recording Academy, quote, was no longer permitted to hire or terminate staff members without board approval, and prohibited Dugan from assigning any new initiatives or special projects to staff members for at least 2 months, as well as choosing outside counsel to the Academy. Dugan also spoke with Katz and was told to ignore it, and that he represented Neiman Marcus and, quote, could get her many free dresses so that she could look pretty at Academy events in exchange for Dugan naming Neiman Marcus as a Grammy sponsor, which she declined.
Just throw money to get what you want. Yeah, yeah, these fucking bastards.
Yeah. December 16th, Dugan responds to the email, defying the limits to her role and stating that, quote, the mandate email seemed to be designed to curb her ability to achieve progress with respect to greater diversity among our staff, the board, and our membership, and the empowerment of women, especially in the wake of her predecessor's disturbing legacy. Katz and members of the board were said to be encouraging Little to, quote, assert baseless legal claims against the Recording Academy and Miss Dugan. The following day, Little's attorney sent the Academy a demand letter accusing Dugan of bullying. December 22nd, Dugan sends an email regarding sexual harassment from Joel Katz and details, quote, egregious conflicts of interest, improper self-dealing by board members, and voting irregularities for Grammy nominations, all made possible by the boys' club mentality and approach to governance. Said email also states that Dugan, quote, had been asked by the then-current chair of the board, John Popo, to hire former CEO Neil Portnow as a consultant for the hefty sum of $750,000, and states that Dugan found out after coming into a position that Portnow also allegedly raped a female recording artist, which was, upon information and belief, the real reason his contract was not renewed. You don't say.
What a shock.
December 24th, Brian Freeman Esquire, the attorney for Miss Dugan, quote, put the Academy on notice of her intention to pursue legal claims. Because when you look at all this, there's a pretty solid case to be made here. Alas, on January 16th, Dugan was sent out on administrative leave, quote, made in retaliation for her complaint, and came with thinly veiled threats of termination in the event that Miss Dugan persisted in pursuing claims against the Academy. Harvey Mason, now the interim CEO, told Dugan that, quote, the Academy would not provide any statements regarding the leave other than, if asked, to say that Miss Dugan had taken a leave of absence. Then the press found leaked information that Dugan was put on administrative leave, quote, in light of concerns raised to the Recording Academy Board of Trustees, including a formal allegation of misconduct by a senior female member of the Academy team, which is described in the legal filings as, quote, completely false and defamatory, and was designed to retaliate against Ms. Dugan, threaten her, and malign her reputation, claiming that she was not placed on leave by the aforementioned response. The Academy also, quote, backed out of a resolution that had nearly been reached to resolve Ms. Dugan's legal claims, and that Harvey Mason both conveyed the board's new unacceptable offer of settlement and told Dugan that she had only 1 hour to accept the Academy's proposal. She didn't, and then she was sent out. The same email had Mason issuing a threat to Dugan with, quote, a termination for cause in the event that she disclosed any confidential information. And this brings us back around to last Monday, January 20th. A letter is penned by Mason and sent to the press which accuses Dugan of, quote, manufacturing legal claims after being put on notice of Miss Little's claims and an attempt to extort the Academy.
Sounds like a whole lot of shit, we're busted, someone cover our ass.
Yeah. Yep. And this legal document also has further details beyond this timeline, which I have labeled points of criticism against the Recording Academy, which comes back around to Neil Portnow, the former CEO of the Recording Academy for 16 years, who in 2018 made the really stupid, pig-headed comment that female artists should step up for recognition. Which were promptly criticized by artists such as Pink, Sheryl Crow, Katy Perry, India Arie, and Vanessa Carlton, who had a petition of over 30,000 signatures calling for his removal. The Lord thing. Remember that?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. And he was also the second CEO to step down after accusations of sexual misconduct. Goddamn. This brings us to the task force that was brought into play after those comments were made, which was established to, quote, examine issues of diversity and inclusion within the Recording Academy and the broader music community, and to examine conscious and unconscious bias in the music industry. Last December, a 47-page report concluded that, quote, the biases affecting women, people of color, and queer creators in the music business is deeply ingrained, and that the 12,000 voting members for the Grammys, quote, is overwhelmingly white and male.
Oh, you don't say.
What a shock.
Yeah. This report also found that two committees, the National Governance and Nomination Review Committees, which are supposed to, quote, serve vital internal and external functions for the Grammys, had historically not been comprised of diverse members. Translation: old white men,
aka guys whose opinions matter to me the least.
Yeah.
It seems like it always just goes to old white men who don't know much shit. See, the other thing except with movies, but now with this music, but yeah, you get the point.
And it also found that nomination review committees have historically not included members that reflect the demographics of society at large. And between 2015 and 2018, the split was 71-29 men over women in governance committee and 74-26 men over women in nomination review committees. And between 2012 and now, the main board demographic was 68% male, 69% white.
It's like
always the white man.
It's like two-thirds.
Yeah. Then there are further claims of corruption, with this document here saying that the nomination process is kept, quote, in secrecy and ultimately controls who is nominated, and then the top 20 selections are reviewed in secret and also ranked 1 to 20, with members of the secret committees, quote, chosen by Bill Freemuth, the head of awards, along with the board chair, which are sat on by board members, quote, including those who represent or have relationships with nominated artists. Meant to whittle the 20 nominees down to the 5, or if needed, 8 most deserving artists, this document also claims that the board uses these committees as an opportunity to push forward artists with whom they have relationships, and that, quote, it is not unusual for artists who have relationships with board members and who ranked at the bottom of the initial list to end up receiving nominations, as well as, quote, manipulating the nominations process to ensure that certain songs or albums are nominated when Ken Ehrlich, the producer of the Grammys, wants a particular song performed during the show.
Fuck you.
We'll come back to him later. Remember that name. It will come back later. Now, citing a further conflict of interest, quote, the board has selected artists who are under consideration for nomination to sit on the committee that is voting for the category for which that has been nominated. This brings up last year's Song of the Year category. This document explicitly states that neither Ed Sheeran nor Ariana Grande were nominated in that category, while another artist, quote, who ranked 18 out of 20 in the category, ended up with a nomination. And said artists, or artists, were permitted to sit on the nomination committee and is also represented by a member of the board. Now, I want to bring this up here. Last year's Song of the Year award, it went to Childish Gambino, This Is America. The other nominations were Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper, Shallow, Zedd, Mary Morrison Gray, The Middle, Brandi Carlile, The Joke, Shawn Mendes, In My Blood, Drake, God's Plan, Ella May, Boot Up, and Kendrick Lamar and SZA, All the Stars. Because there were strict confidentiality agreements, it's very, very unlikely we'll ever know who this individual or individuals are. But, and I'll come back to this later on, award nomination irregularities. Just know that, if there's some conflict of interest going on here, it definitely deserves to be called out and identified. So, someone out there, please do your damn job.
I'm counting on you.
Yeah. I'm not, and probably just to lighten the mood a little bit, I'm not going to speculate who this one song that was ranked lower was, but can I just say Shawn Mendes sucks? Why do we reward him so much?
I do not understand why.
Yeah. Not like I'm mentioning him for any reason, but read between the lines. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, there were also testimonials of some kind with further claims of professional misconduct happening within the Recording Academy. With Megan Clark, the prior chief information officer, who wrote to Dugan claiming that she had been harassed by a male board member and reported it to HR, Clark was then told, after following up on her complaint, that, quote, she would be terminated if she did not resign. And Clark also warned Dugan that, quote, if you open your mouth, you're gone.
Damn.
Then we hear from a report about Dana Tamarkin, the former vice president of Music Cares, the Recording Academy's nonprofit organization, also a 25-year employee, alleging in a lawsuit that she was terminated in April of 2018, quote, because she blew the whistle on financial improprieties and on the basis of her gender and age. Also alleging that Portnow ran a boys' club within the RA. Quote, the so-called boys' club was a group of men who were deeply loyal to Mr. Portnow, regularly socialized with him, and served as go-tos for anything he needed. Multiple women failed at breaking down the barriers to join this club. She also accused Portnow of steering money away from Music Cares after the Academy was hit with unexpected costs due to its decision to hold the 2018 Grammy Awards at Madison Square Garden in New York City, which, fuck you, don't sell the team, and accused Portnow of blocking efforts to brief the board, while also being alleged that, quote, she had used an unsold $2,500 hotel certificate from a Music Cares auction to go to Portugal, claiming that she tried to pay for it when she was reminded of it. She alleged that the investigation was used as a pretext to fire her. And there are a few more testimonials here with their names withheld. The first being from the former head of commissions who left the Academy in the wake of Portnow's step up comments. And two cases of racial discrimination with a black woman fired from the Academy's museum after raising concerns regarding diversity in the Academy. And a temp worker who was black and gay who suffered egregious discrimination to the point that he had a mental breakdown after colleagues hung a demeaning picture depicting him as a caricature with huge, exaggerated lips, which hung for months and was brought to the Staples Center during set construction for the Grammys telecast. The initial person who hung the photo was terminated, but none who were complicit were disciplined, quote, in any manner.
Double fuck, y'all.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're almost done with this. Well, we actually have further details to go through, so we're not done with this. God damn it. Damn. Okay. Now this goes back around to how it works with nomination fields. This document claims that less than 10% of nominees in the top five categories, record, album, song, new artist, and producer, were women, with only one female recipient in the 2018 telecast being Alicia Cara, and Lorde was notably not invited to perform, despite her Album of the Year nomination. 10 artists of color have won Album of the Year, the first one happening in 2004 with Outkast.
Yep, and that was 16 years ago.
Yeah.
16 years ago.
Yeah, and speaking of Album of the Year, 2012. Mumford & Sons won Album of the Year over Frank Ocean's Channel Orange, which was said to cause Ocean to not submit Blonde for any consideration in 2016. He was quoted as saying, "I think the infrastructure of the awarding system and the nomination system and screening system is dated. I'd rather this be my Colin Kaepernick moment for the Grammys than sit there in the audience."
Damn, he went there.
Yeah, I'm with him on there. Yeah.
2014. Best Rap Album. Pretty stacked field of nominations. You had Drake, you had Kanye West, you had Kendrick Lamar, and yet it went to Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
Oh yeah, I remember that year.
Yeah. This is some shit. 2017. Beyoncé's Lemonade was nominated for Album of the Year. It went to Adele's 25.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Adele, like, agree that the decision was bullshit herself to the point where she, like, tried breaking her award in half?
Yes.
I vaguely recall some...
Yes, she did.
Knew it. I knew that happened something, and I figured that was it, so...
Yeah, that was the one. That was indeed the one. And while this wasn't in the document, I do want to mention 2016, Taylor Swift over Kendrick Lamar.
That's some old bullshit.
Oh, yeah. That you.
Also, 2015, Beck over Beyonce.
And Kanye was trying to get on stage, but he said, like, you know what, I'm not going to do it again.
Oh, God. And we go back to last year, which had a couple of cut-off acceptance speeches from Drake and Dua Lipa, quoting as both of whom had made comments critical of the Academy. Drake was quoted as saying, "We play an opinion-based sport, not a factual-based sport. This is a business where sometimes it's up to a bunch of people that might not understand what a mixed-race kid from Canada might have to say, or a fly Spanish girl from New York."
Always the crusty white boys.
Yeah, this is a very damning document. And in the days that followed, it did not get any less messy. I'll just say that. There were reports coming out regarding this from The Hollywood Reporter, from Variety, from The Washington Post. There was a great editorial from DJ Booth regarding all of this. But then it became time for the Recording Academy to talk a little bit and try to defend themselves. Because on Wednesday, the 22nd, it was announced that Deborah Dugan would be making two television appearances on ABC for Good Morning America and on CBS for CBS This Morning the following morning. This prompted the Recording Academy to basically send out the Karens.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. And not the one for Fire Emblem, no. Either.
Tammy Hurt, Christine Albert, Leslie Ann Jones, and Terry Jones, all of whom are either executive committee or on the chair or on the board for the Recording Academy, had a bit of a statement of their own. And how do I put it delicately? This is what happens when you try to cover a gigantic organization's ass. I'm not going to say the whole piece here because we don't have that much time, but it does have some very meticulous and carefully constructed wording to it. A lot of spiel about, oh, no, there's nothing like that going on. As women, we firmly believe in the transparency of the Recording Academy and how they do it. And we're disturbed by all of this. We don't think this is a boys' club. No way, no how. It's very calculated in a lot of ways.
All I'm thinking of right now is that bit from South Park with the BP executive apologizing.
This is some Stepford Wife bullshit or whatever the fuck it is, but it is something like that. Every word of this just makes my stomach churn.
Yeah. Now, Thursday morning came. Deborah Dugan had her interviews on both Good Morning America and CBS This Morning, to which I have to say, for ABC, why did you have George Stephanopoulos do this interview? He came off as very, a little confrontational at times. Same with Gayle King on CBS. You couldn't have picked anybody more suitable and eager to converse with. No? Just want to keep your jobs and pedal your corporate lines? Okay, fine, whatever. Okay. All that came and went, and then, later that day, we got another response from the Recording Academies themselves. Hmm. Once again, more covering of their ass. Now, while Dugan said on CBS This Morning, quote, "In that room, not only are there trustees that have conflicts of interest on particular artists that are nominated, but more importantly, there are even artists that are nominated that are in that room," and saying that they are strictly, the Recording Academy, with their response, said the following. "There are strict rules in place to address any conflict of interest. Should a committee member qualify for a Grammy, they are required to leave the room for the entire listening session and are not allowed to vote in that category. Committee members do not know the ranking of any entry, and the voting is by secret ballot. The committees are not confidential, but the committee members' names are, for the obvious reason of preventing lobbying from outside parties, therefore protecting the integrity of the voting process." This is basically a lot of she said, they said going on. And considering some of the events that have transpired over the last couple of years with very similar layouts regarding business bullshit, be it through Harvey Weinstein, or even some manager at your local workplace. This shit keeps happening. People are finally getting tired of it. They're starting to speak up, even though in many cases they realize this could do much more harm to them professionally and personally. And this seemed to have some ramifications regarding the ceremony on Sunday, because there was a planned performance to happen during the Grammy Awards telecast with Taylor Swift. this was meant to be kind of a secret surprise, but when all of this started happening, it became very clear from this report from Variety that she decided to basically say no and bow out. Which is probably the best thing she could have done, considering she's now in the point of, okay, I'm starting to see now I kind of fucked up with this whole election crap. Sorry? Y'all forgive me? I'll make it up to you, I promise. Now, this is still ongoing. We still have a ways to go. Then Sunday happened.
Yes, the day where everything went to shit.
Yeah.
But we already know we don't need to relitigate all that tragedy.
Yeah.
We just have to focus on the biggest tragedy, which is the actual award ceremony itself. Goddamn.
Yeah, and once again, we have to start with the highlights from the actual awards show, the Grammys premiere ceremony. 75 awards, all of which were given out in a little under 3.5 hours. And it couldn't have happened at a worse time because that was right after the news broke. Like, a half hour after the news broke.
Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. Now, because the Grammys were at the Staples Center, that meant that whole building was basically walled off from the public, so I'm sure people have seen the live shots from Los Angeles with people gathering. That's right across from the Staples Center because they couldn't do it at the building itself, which was obviously close to the public. What a fucking terrible case of bad timing. Just in general, everything has been timed to shit.
Again, we just need to hit the reset button. But I suppose we might as well dive into some of the more notable parts of the premiere ceremony, the awards that were felt not worthy of being handed out on television, which include compilation soundtrack, A Star Is Born, Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper won that one. Best score soundtrack went to Hildur Guðnadóttir for the HBO, I believe, series Chernobyl.
Yes.
Best song for visual media, I'll Never Love Again, Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper. Best engineered album, non-classical, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go, Billie Eilish. Remember that for later. Best music video, Old Town Road. Nice. Mm-hmm. Best music film went to Beyonce's Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Obama, Becoming, won for Best Spoken Word. Dance electronic album went to the Chemical Brothers, No Geography.
All
right. Instrumental composition, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge Symphonic Suite by John Williams, which... Wait, hold on. You can nominate amusement park music for that category?
Apparently so.
Huh. All right, then. Country solo performance, Ride Me Back Home by Willie Nelson. Country song, Bring My Flowers Now, Tanya Tucker. Country album, While I'm Living, Tanya Tucker. Latin pop album, El Disco by Alejandro Sanz. Latin rock, urban, or alternative album went to Anthony Fantano's Girl Rosalia with El Mal Querer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Looks like all that Twitter advocating paid off after all.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Tropical Latin album went to Opus by Mark Anthony and A Journey Through Cuban Music by Amy Nuviola.
It's a tie. It happened again.
Yep.
Interesting.
Another tie.
Best rap performance went to Racks in the Middle by the late Nipsey Hussle.
Mm-hmm.
Best rap song went to A Lot, J. Cole and 21 Savage. Rock performance, This Land by Gary Clark Jr. Best metal performance, Tempest by Tool.
Yay.
Best rock song, again, This Land. Rock album, Social Cues, Cage the Elephant. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Alternative album, Father of the Bride, Vampire Weekend, also bullshit.
Mm.
Yep.
R&B performance, that went to Come Home by Anderson .Paak and Andre 3000.
Yes!
Traditional R&B performance went to Jerome by Lizzo.
Okay.
R&B song, Say So by PJ Morton and JoJo.
Thank God it's not the other song.
Thank God. Best Urban Contemporary Album, 'Cause I Love You by Lizzo. R&B album went to Anderson .Paak for Ventura.
Nice.
2 for 2.
Pop duo group performance went to our meme lord for Old Town Road. Traditional pop album went to Look Now by Elvis Costello and the Impostors. Pop vocal album, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go, Billie Eilish. And producer of the year, non-classical, went to Phineas, no Ferb. And now we get to the actual main show at 8 p.m. Things kick off with a performance by Lizzo with a medley of 'Cause I Love You and Truth Hurts, dedicating it to, of course, the late Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, Alicia Keys comes out on stage, discussing, you know, the sorrow surrounding the events earlier today, performing the song It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday with Boyz II Men. Then a performance of Nobody But You with Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani.
Okay.
Another commercial break, followed by Alicia Keys at the piano, giving a small speech and, quote, probably her planned opening with an interpolation of, oh God, that one Lewis Capaldi song.
Yeah.
Oh, Alicia, why? Why, Alicia?
Yeah, why?
This was so corny.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
Hey, this was planned.
Just... I don't know. Just... Oh, God. Fuck Lewis Capaldi. And then after that, Billy Porter comes out to introduce the Jonas Brothers.
This Damn. Was the worst performance of the night by a long shot. It was... It was bad. It was bland, boring, and bad.
Oh, I would actually call it second worse.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's very bad.
I will,
but there's one that I hate.
Yeah, I will say
on principle. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
Sorry.
Bad based by performance, not principle performance.
Fair enough.
Okay, I will add this. Billy Paul looks fabulous.
Yeah, he's got a nice hat doohickey.
Yes.
Yeah, then after that, Keith Urban and Cynthia Erivo introduced Best Pop Solo Performance Award. The winner goes to Truth Hurts by Lizzo. And then a whole bunch of button censoring.
Yep, censor.
You know, CBS is part of Viacom and MTV again. You'd think they'd be able to get away with this. Because, it's 2020. Nobody cares about bad words anymore.
Just say fuck, shit, crap, damn like normal people.
That's the first award of the night after 30 minutes, by the way.
Yeah.
And then...
Playing this game again.
And then, you know, we get a commercial break, and when we come back, we get easily the single best part of the night. After an introduction from Trevor Noah, we get a performance from Tyler, the Creator, with Uncle Charlie and Boyz II Men. And holy shit, I have no idea where the fuck this performance came from, but God fucking damn.
The best performance of the night by a mile.
This was fucking hype. We needed this after a day like this. We needed something this hype. This was fucking good, especially from Boyz II Men and Charlie Mustang Wilson.
He was just fucking going the hell off. Yeah. Like, holy shit.
Yes.
Then you got the whole thing with the fire and Tyler falling in the pit. But why was the camera shaking via effects?
I don't know.
It's weird.
I mean, it was weird, but it's weird, but hey, it cheered me up.
And for the record, that performance started at 8:39, closes at roughly 8:45 for the next commercial break. So, yeah, the ceremony hit its absolute highest peak at 45 minutes. Yep. Not even at a full hour.
Yep.
Anyway, after that commercial break, we get Alicia Keys again doing a bit with the celebrities in the audience before introducing Bebe Rexha and Shania Twain for Best Country Duo / Group Performance Award, the winner being Speechless by Dan and Shay. Okay.
Eh.
Yeah.
Then, go ahead.
I figured him saying, I think,
one word that makes to make us cringe. I want a big Scooter Braun.
God damn. Maybe that's why Taylor Swift decided to no-show. She knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't blame her. I don't.
But and then...
Then, for some reason, we get a tribute to Prince with Usher, Sheila E., and FKA Twigs.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I mean,
yeah.
I did this, like, I don't know, like... You know, like, not... Shit, how long Prince has been...
Yeah.
It's been at least a few years.
A few years, like, to could have did it, like, you know, during the following...
You want to know why they did this? It's because they wanted to promote a special Prince tribute that will be airing on CBS later this year. That's why.
Brand synergy. It's fucking dumb. I mean, we like Prince, but don't be pulling shit like this. Jeez. Okay, then we get another commercial break. Then Jim Gaffigan introducing a performance of First Man by Camila Cabello. Then, I don't know, it's Camila Cabello. What the hell do you want me to say?
Like, people were saying, oh my god, it's so emotional, it's so sweet, it's so tender. I'm like, I'm kind of creeped out by this. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't need to see a woman singing to her dad that close. Like, that's a little far.
It's like, it's so wholesome, it's kind of creepy. It's like, it's that kind of fact. It's like, we get it, but it's like, you lay it out kind
of
too fake.
I was sort of expecting the Folgers commercial to show up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Levity.
Then we get a performance from Brandi Carlile and Tanya Tucker. And then the award for Best Comedy Album, which went to Dave Chappelle, Sticks and Stones. Chappelle was not there to accept. Then we get another commercial break. Following that, we get Ben Platt introducing Ariana Grande performing Imagine, Seven Rings, and Thank You Next, with several bleeped F-bombs.
I was kind of hoping she would go rogue and just flip the camera off because of a certain individual, which we'll get back to later. But I guess we can't have everything we want now, can we?
Yeah, it's like, oh, imagine that song was good. Then Seven Rings happened, which like, you could have just did the beginning and then just skip that and just go to Thank You Next.
Yep, let's,
Because I don't want to hear, give me the loop! No, you can't, again, you cannot pull that give me the loop shit.
Stick a pin in that, we'll come back to it later. So, let's see. Anyway, after that, another commercial break, and then we get a performance from Billie Eilish doing the song When the Party's Over.
This was great.
Yes, it's really good. I mean, this is also another favorite song of mine from that album.
Yeah, it was.
And also, gets to show us, like, you know, she's more than just the bad guy girl.
Indeed. She's the person that also does not really want to be there at all for reasons that we will bring up later.
Yeah.
And then after that, oh, dear fucking Lord.
Yeah, oh God.
Oh boy.
This was the nadir of the whole show for me. Aerosmith. And, you know, just... I say this is the worst moment of the show. The worst performance. The one that I just hate on pure principle because... I am now so fucking sick and tired of Walk This Way. Just,
yeah.
If Walk This Way was a person,
yeah,
I would stab it 37 times in the chest. And yes, I know that kills people. That's the point. I mean, you couldn't kill it any worse than these got fucking boomer ass dinosaurs already have. Just, oh my god, it's like, you could just imagine, we'll be in the year 2100, every member will be dead, all the world's pop stars will be identified by, like, Twitter hashtags and algorithms instead of actual names, and they'll still be bringing out Aerosmith and Run DMC holograms to perform this friggin' song. Like, what the fuck was the point here?
Because...
And not to mention, we all know that it's bullshit, because apparently y'all been beefing with your drummer Joey Kramer. Did we mention this? Did y'all hear about that? That's another bit of tangentially unrelated bullshit going into this award show.
Yeah,
yep.
They're having a bit of a beef and a spat, and prevented Joey Kramer from performing with the band. So, yeah, but you see, the reason why we got to see Aerosmith here was because Aerosmith were the guests of honor at the Music Cares Gala the Friday before, accepting their honor as Music Cares Person of the Year. I don't know how, I don't know why, it's probably rigged just like the rest of the awards show, but who the hell cares? I zoned out of this. I did not pay any attention to it.
Yeah. It's a bunch of bullshit. Goddamn. Yeah. But anyway, after that nonsense waste of time, which, yeah, for the record, according to the timestamp, that was 10 fucking minutes. What the fuck? So then, after the commercial break, Issa Rae comes out to introduce the award for Best Rap Album. The winner...
Yep.
...was Igor.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I'm gonna say this. I wanna say this. Yes, it's well-deserved. Tyler deserves it. But, after, you know, the whole thing... But after the whole thing with, you know... You know, he did an interview, which what he says, yes, he's here for me. It's like y'all do realize that my album is not just a rap album, right? It has, you know, it was a pop R&B, that type of shit. Like he said that, you know my album is not just a rap album, right? It's like y'all didn't get. It's like I know he said an analogy of like handing somebody the controller, it's like the controller, but not plugged in. But yeah, but. Yeah, especially what I said, I mean, what's about nominations of this? Like, y'all basically just put him just a rap category, but not any other category because you're freaking, like, he can't handle it, but you know. Yeah, like, well, I want to say that I'm glad he won, but he was right on the money when he said y'all giving just a rap category just a backhanded compliment. Like, I mean, you're good for this, but for the big boys, yeah, you're not. You can stay right here. Right here. You can just play right here in the kids' table. We're just going to sit there and eat steak and lobster. Here's some, you know, Tyson chicken nuggets.
Don't forget about the part where he accurately pointed out how urban as a classification is basically just a politically correct way of saying the N-word.
Yeah, that too.
And I would be remiss if I didn't point out the one tweet he made earlier today, where on August 25th, 2011, a Twitter user named Ilpino said, @fucktyler, don't be too excited, you won't get one, to which he quote tweeted, I favorited this 9 years ago just for the moment to tell you I got one. Yes, I'm petty as fuck. Good day, Mark. It's a different Mark from our Mark. Let that be clear. But man, let me just say, I aspire to that level of pettiness, man. That is beautiful.
Yep.
Anyway, after Tyler got his award, then Ellen DeGeneres comes on to introduce the meme. The living meme himself. Lil Nas X performing Old Town Road. The ultimate remix with literally all the big stars he can. It's not just Billy Ray Cyrus, but there's also Diplo, the stupid Walmart Yodel Kid, and BTS.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The ultimate Old Town Road collaboration. Yeah, all we're waiting for. And then as he finishes that, he finishes another song, Rodeo, and it's with, what do you know? It's Regular Nas.
Yeah.
Or Big Nas, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the Nas we know, but yeah, that's just, that's unexpected. Tapping Lil Nas and regular Nas, but that performance overall, that was also a favorite of mine. Like, I think this and Tyler are my top two performances of the ceremony so far.
Mm-hmm. I'd be remiss if we didn't mention at the start of the video, he had a Kobe Bryant jersey on his little set, and there was a quote unquote TV playing the Chowder Panini video. Which is more attention for Chowder that's been received by Cartoon than which is more attention that Chowder has gotten than Cartoon Network has given in the last 10 years.
I got your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Capitalize on the memes, and Cartoon Network. Come on.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, and by the way, people do get mad a little for, like, okay, look, again, that I know what happened there, but look, he just, that he wants something, like, you didn't have to, you know, get on him for that shit. Y'all just sound like petty before the wrong reasons.
Exactly. Anyway, after that great performance, commercial break. Then we get Greta Gerwig, film director, introducing Demi Lovato, performing Anyone with a second take for some reason.
Yeah, she kind of slipped in the beginning and had to restart. I kind of caught me off guard.
Yep. Anyway, after that, another commercial break. Then the Lifetime Achievement Awards, which go to Chicago, fuck you.
Damn.
Suck my fucking ass, Peter Cetera. Roberta Flack, Isaac Hayes, John Prine, Iggy Pop, Public Enemy, and Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Then after that, Ava DuVernay introduces a Nipsey Hussle tribute with Meek Mill and Company, and apparently also DJ Khaled, and YG, not giving a fuck about the censors.
And apparently, was YG supposed to be arrested Friday or something? Because, I don't know, for some shit, it's like, somebody would be arresting him, but yeah, that was kind of weird, but yeah, but yeah, like, I did like the Nipsey Hussle, even though, yeah, we got the one guy that guy's asking about Will Smith and Bad Boys for Life.
Why is DJ Khaled always showing up? We don't need a hype man for this. Get a real job, man.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe actually some work on albums for once. Jeez.
Yeah. Again, I'm just seeing him get beat by Will Smith and Bad Boys for Life.
Right. I still need to watch that movie.
Yeah, but... it's good. I'm just gonna say that right now. But this was, like, you know, a good tribute to, you know, especially since... LA is going to some shit considering that, well... Even though Nipsey he died last year, LA laws is about, you know, people losing to LA. Matter of fact, there's been a lot of losses between people that were from LA, like this, like him, like Nipsey Hussle, Kobe Bryant, John Singleton last year, who am I missing? I want to say John Witherspoon, but is he from LA?
I'm not entirely sure.
I was thinking that. He was living in LA in Los Angeles. He was living in LA at the time.
Right.
But the tribute was, you know, it was, you know, it was all good. Well, minus the DJ Khaled shit, but yeah.
Right. Anyway, another commercial break. Then Alicia Keys comes back out to introduce a performance from Rosalia. I'm sure Anthony Fantano was very proud.
Mm-hmm.
I should probably listen to some Rosalia soon. Anyway, after that, we got a Smokey Robinson and Little Big Town doing the annual Smokey Robinson sing-along before presenting Song of the Year. And the winner was Bad Guy by Billie Eilish. Chalk that one up for later.
Yeah, she was fucking shocked.
Yeah.
Then after that, we get another commercial break, then a performance with Alicia Keys and Brittany Howard. another commercial break, and then out come the Osbournes, Sharon and Ozzy.
Oh, I hate this. I fucking hate this. It's like, why would you get them to present the wrestling performance? Like, is it because Osbournes? Is it because Ozzy did this shit with Posty and Travis Scott?
It's probably like, because the producers thought it would be funny to have two old white people hand out an award for the rap category.
And it's not because the way Sharon Osbourne said the introduces like, please stop. This is the most cringiest thing I hear from heard from this award show so far.
Come on. It's bad enough Ozzy has Parkinson's disease and has to walk around with a cane. Don't do this, too.
That's just fucking disrespect. Show the creator of metal some fucking respect. God damn this industry.
Anyway, the winner is of course Higher from DC Hustle and John Legend.
And no one else.
And I have to say, if this won, I would be mad, but it is a double-edged sword. Cause you get the point. You get the point. It's like, you know, Nipsey and his family's all there, you know, all that stuff. But it's cool. It's fine.
And then after that, we get one of the other really great performances of the night, courtesy of her.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and I wish I saw it because that's when my DVR cut the fucking. I should have played a hand recorded more when I forgot this would go over. This would go over the overlay. Yeah. By the way, by the time it was formed, it was I'm guessing 11. Yeah. Which, yep. Mm. And fuck, I really wish.
I think for the rest of us, this was slotted to go until 11:30. Spoiler: it went over 11:30 again.
We absolutely needed the Aerosmith performance. It's not like that was 10 minutes taking up fucking time with bullshit. Fuck you.
With all these long commercials that for some reason are split in half, with Zane Lowe popping in for 5 seconds, who nobody asked for.
Jesus, tap dancing Christ. And yeah, but, you know, still, her performance was great.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, we get a commercial break, and then Bonnie Raitt briefly performs and then introduces a performance from Gary Clark Jr. and the Roots, which was also pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And as I believe Alex himself put it, the two of them, Gary Clark Jr. and her, are doing more to protect the institution of rock music than fucking Imagine Dragons.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Vince Neil Stein, but no, rock is not dead. It's just taking some time to rediscover what it truly is.
Yep. Everybody go listen to Moron Police already.
Yes. And Astronoid.
It is all thanks to two. Yeah, it's all thanks to two people of color. People of color who actually invented rock in the first place.
Yeah. And then it got stolen by white people.
Fuck you, Elvis.
Yeah. I'm glad you died taking a shit. It's a perfect metaphor.
Jokes. We need
actually,
them.
I should probably submit that as a song title for JPEG Mafia.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we get the In Memoriam segment. And then, you know, after that, Alicia Keys and Dua Lipa introduce Best New Artist. The winner was, of course, Billie Eilish, who got bleeped out for reasons.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we got the Trustees Award, which was presented to Philip Glass, Frank Walker, and fuck you!
Hey, bitch nigga.
This was the moment I fucking lost it. You want to know what they did for their big, grand, show-stopping finale in performances for the show? They decided to give an honor to Ken Ehrlich, the producer of the Grammys, as this was his last year, by wasting everyone's time with a gigantic all-star performance of The Body Electric. But don't worry, it's okay, because this is also a tribute to music education. Not just the creepy guy who decided Oh, no, no, Ariana Grande, you're not going to show up. No, 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 no. Oh, really, John Legend, you have nothing else better to do that night? All y'all are just trying to suck up to the old white men on the way out? Who also got caught doing some pretty bad shit? Fuck you. And, as expected, this caused the show to run over its allotted time past 11:30, which meant, once again, the last two awards, the most important awards of the entire show, had to be rushed out. You all do this every year. Why do you not learn it? You're like the freaking shocked Pikachu, amazed that you're running over your time and you gotta take it home in like 5 minutes. You do this every year.
Y'all can't play y'all shit right.
God. People don't understand editing these days.
Well, I mean, if you take out some of the awful performances and whittle the 6 minute commercial breaks down and take out Zane Lowe, you wouldn't have this problem. That's all I'm saying.
We can do this shit better than they can.
Yeah, so let's just go into the last couple of awards. So, presented by, at least the first of these, presented by LL Cool J to hand out Album of the Year. And the winner was When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go by Billie Eilish. And I want to point out, I forget which of these awards that it was where it happened, but there was this pretty noticeable moment. Everyone's kind of circulating the clip where Billie Eilish, you see, they're going to say, and the winner is, and she's just like, visibly mouths, please don't let it be me.
Don't be me.
I think it was this one. Because she mentioned in her speech that she felt that Ariana Grande thinking next should have won. Which I will say, pound for pound, Thank You Next is the stronger album. I'm not mad over, you know, Billie Eilish winning it, but, you know, all that stuff with the producers, that might have had a hand in it. Because, I mean, Taylor Swift went home without any awards, which normally I'd be happy for, but given everything that's happened, I can't help but wonder if there's been some foul play involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, at this rate, that might very well be a possibility. Like, I don't know. In theory, I can understand the appeal of Thank You Next, but I just feel like I got more out of the Billie Eilish album at the end of the day. But that's just one man's opinion.
Yeah, same here.
Anyway, then after that, and a whole bunch of bleeps, then Alicia Keys presents Record of the Year, which of course goes to Bad Guy by Billie Eilish, meaning she didn't even have to leave the stage.
And they gave the best possible speech you could ever give. Thank you. Bye. Because, you know, they're running late and they gotta get off the air. 11 minutes over again.
Yeah.
And I just have to ask, how did Bon Iver get an Album of the Year nomination?
As someone who listened to that whole album, fuck if I know.
God.
Again.
And Record of the Year for Hey Maas. Like, really? Bon Iver? Really?
You know, I'm just chalking this up to the old crusty white fucks.
Yeah. Well, I'm not mad. I'm okay with this, because it gives me a little bit of hope that nobody who runs a doll in my bedroom might one day have a chance to make it in the industry, so long as I meet the right people.
Someone email us. Or shoot us a DM on Twitter or something.
Yeah, we can be a three-man band, like, some version of Death Grips, I don't know.
Yep, we're gonna write the next guillotine, motherfuckers. And then we're gonna play it when we start executing the rich. Yeet.
Yeah. But yeah, this whole Grammy shit, like, oh man,
this not just because of the controversies, but because of like the actual ceremony itself. This is the bleakest and most hopeless Grammy ceremony I ever sat through. Tyler, the Creator, her, and Gary Clark Jr. aside, this just felt like a black hole of misery.
Yeah. With everything that had happened during the day, it did have a big ominous cloud over it, and this is going to sound really cynical of me, but the attention over the helicopter crash with Kobe Bryant, it did take a lot of attention off of the Recording Academy drama with Deborah Dugan, which I will say, this felt like it was meant to be a very safe show in a lot of ways. I mean, Jim Gaffigan introducing Camila Cabello doesn't make a lot of sense unless you take into consideration that this is being produced by an organization who is trying to be as safe and non-confrontational as possible. Didn't make for the best show, though, because, high spots aside, this was... It just felt like a show that I think most people just wanted to be over.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm just gonna say this. I think this makes the Crunchyroll Anime Awards seem less, what's the word I'm looking for? Not as hopeless as this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just how it'd be with this whole thing, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know this seems like, yeah, we're pretty much, well, fucking miserable. Sound like this because you're supposed to be snarky and jokey and all that shit, but real life once again just kicked us in the balls and it punched us. It didn't stole our wallet. Leave us in the rain.
I'm glad I had the day off because I just so fucking dead tired and exhausted and defeated on Sunday. One of those days where you just want to stay in bed and not do anything.
I mean, I may have had a bit of great personal news in my own life, but aside from that, yeah, just a 3-hour black hole void. That's really...
I was having a good weekend. I mean, up until that point, I was like, oh boy, this week is going good so far. Nothing can fuck this up. And then something fucked this up.
Look, it's all, at least the ceremony is all said and done. And now we just have to wait for the fallout to get exponentially worse.
Yeah. Oh, and one last thing. I just have to ask. Recording Academy... Who keeps inviting Joy Villa to your award show?
Yeah,
why
does she still come there?
Who cares? Who cares about this woman? Who is this woman? Seriously, I don't know who she is. All I know is that she's out of her fucking mind, insane.
Just. Fuck that person. Fuck him. And fuck everything. As Suicide Silence once said.
Yeah. Everything sucks, but Billie Eilish, all hail our emo pop Jolene Cujo music overlord.
Yes, and please look at her for winning a lot. She didn't expect this shit to happen. No one did. We didn't, but... In other words, she did not pull no Macklemore. Dude, let's not go there.
And at the end of the day, we're all that one guy from The Simpsons going, oh, it's a Grammy.
But yeah, that basically wraps it up for all of that stuff. So now to clean house and get the hell out of here. Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Azure, where... stuff, things, yeah.
Yeah. Mark, what about you?
As usual, Twitter, MacTavin Media, on my site, mindhypepoint.com. I mean, you know what? I have a new chapter of Orphan Next Gen BK Squad up. Yeah, it's up right now. So yeah, go check out. You want to read that? Get at least something that's, you know, a bit, you know, more, well, fun, or at least, you know, not depressing.
Yeah. Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and CuriousCat at Rob Barracuda. Email me, robert@sewerresolution.com for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video highlights usually go up by the weekend on the official YouTube channel of Sewer Resolution. So just subscribe, hit the bell tab whenever stuff goes up there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SerialRezzo. Like us on Facebook. Be sure to visit the website SerialResolution.com, where you can find this podcast, podcast ONA, written articles, all of that wonderful shit. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat to crack jokes about freaking, I don't know, Atari hotels or something. How the fuck is that even real? Anyway, and last but not least, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, that'll about do it for this soul-sucking week of an episode. We'll be back next week with hopefully something more jovial. And until then, yeah. Eat my fat, pasty, white-ass Neil Port now.